back to Shattering Mist. For those of you who listened to the second hour yesterday, you got a double dose of Captain Kirk. Kirk, day before yesterday, you presented a rather profound idea relative to the covenant, particularly as it relates to the falsity of Paul's claims. And therefore, there was a double benefit of replaying it yesterday. First is to let it sink in, and the second was that I flew my plane to Virginia yesterday to go pick up my wife and bring her here to Ohio. So I was punching holes in clouds yesterday. But you probably don't get a chance very often to actually listen to your ideas. That's a strong one you came up with.
Well, it's historically accurate.
So yes. Yeah.
It totally makes sense to me. I mean, I have studied all the, I study a lot of history. I mean, I know what it says. I mean, everybody, no one disagrees that, of who these people are and where they came from. So you can't start with a Jew till you get Judah. And Judah's a grandson, great grandson.
Correct.
Abraham. So that places everybody prior to that not related
Correct.
To Judah. And,
Correct.
Of course, you have 11 brothers that are also not Judah.
Correct.
As well. So this thing of these are Judaizers, whatever the heck that means, usually referring to, I'm sure,
Israel as a whole.
Right, Israel as a whole, and also as the Pharisees, pharisaical approach. Just absurd. So the
yes,
whole arguments with Paul... I was thinking this morning, the whole argument with Paul is unless he's going to present some proof, now right beside me each day that we talk, I try to be in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
I have a stack of sheets that cover the 10 statements in stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I have another stack on a little clipboard that covers the covenant relationship
mm-hmm.
with Abraham. And all the little paraphernalia and notes and everything that I have associated with it. Unless you can disprove that, unless Paul can present an argument where these things are no longer valid, then everything he says is a moot point to begin with.
Yeah, the only third clipboard that you could have would be the clipboard on the invitations to
Well, I have that too, I'm sorry. But I mean, of these that are immediately right here that I can grab.
Yeah, and those three, if you... Unless you can prove that all three of those are invalid, the covenant's invalid, the invitations to meet with God, to be called out of the world are invalid, and that God's entire plan for us, his entire reason that we exist as it's been communicated is invalid, including the 10 statements that he etched in stone, how can you have a New Testament?
Right. And I read through Luke again through in a little interlinear last
mm-hmm.
night, and
mm-hmm.
it just isn't there now. There's a section later that you come to where Jacob is quite adamant that is very well spoken, and
mm-hmm.
but which he's always the bad guy in the Christian movement. But
of course,
have less. It's easy to hit.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. They named him after the British king. They changed his name from Jacob to James to humor the English king. That was the basis of the King James translation. It is, you know, the first point that you made is the most profound, although there's lots of insights on this that are interesting and completely destructive of the religion of Christianity. The first insight is that you can't divide the world.
No.
From a salvation perspective or from a relationship perspective or a Torah perspective or a covenant perspective based upon this notion of ethnicities versus the Jews.
Right.
Because the covenant was established not with a Jew, but with a Babylonian.
Mm-hmm.
And that the husband and wife... that produced the first child, they were both Babylonian, as was their child.
Exactly, yeah.
And so the covenant is not about Jews. It is about taking people out of and away from confusion, human institutions, Babylon, and bringing them into the promised land. That is what the covenant is all about. So it's about taking people from Babylon and bringing them into the promised land. And Yahweh's outreach was towards Goyim, Gentiles, Babylonians. And so when Paul then says that Shimon, Jacob, and Yohanan, Peter, John, and James, were limited by him and agreed to be limited in terms of their outreach only to Jews, well, that would be the opposite of what Yahusha told them and what Yahweh has always been about.
And what the historical record demonstrates that they did.
Correct. And by the way, the I think it's the longest prophetic book, but it's not the longest, it's the second longest, Yirmiyah. And Yirmiyah is the book that trashes the notion of the Christian New Testament. Who was that book written to?
Gentiles?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only book in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that begins by saying this book is written to Gentiles. And so Yahweh has always had an interest in sharing his anti-religious, pro-covenant message with the entire world, and has used Yehudim to do that. So what you basically have a contrast here is that Paul is saying that Yahweh's chosen people could not reach out to the ethnicities, and that he was taking people back to Babylon because of his affinity for the Roman government, which was the manifestation of the fourth beast, as Yahweh describes the beast in Daniel. Rome is the epitome of the beast. And Paul is taking them back to Babylon.
Right.
Just as Yahweh took Abraham and Sarah out of Babylon to the promised land via the covenant.
And so it seems to be that the history, they either wind up in Egypt or they wind up back in Babylon a second time,
right?
You know, in captivity and so forth. So he uses that not only as a metaphor, but he uses it constantly as an example, as teaching an example. So you keep wanting to go back there, so go back there.
So, you know, the Israelites wanted to, the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, there was a drought in Israel. They went into to Egypt. By their own choice, they were enslaved there. And now you have a politicized religious government that is almost the embodiment, the living embodiment of what Babylon once was. It's called Mitzrayim, the crucible. In fact, Egyptians still use that term to describe them themselves. Mitzrayim, the crucible. And what did Yahweh do? Did he say, nope, you're just going to stay there as slaves forever? I really like it when my people are slaves.
Well, no, but he didn't rush to do them, but he told them his promises are always good to him. These are their his voice group, his control group, as you like to say, and I agree.
Yeah.
So he would he'll always go there to rescue him because he's made these promises to Abraham, and his plan is going to be displayed on the world's surface, on the world's stage, regardless.
Yeah, he told Abraham that he was going to free them from being enslaved after 400 years.
Right.
And so, do you think there's a reason that he was just callous of time? Do you think he was in no hurry? Or why was it that he allowed them to be slaves there for 400 years and picked a time certain to rescue them?
40 days, 40 years.
Time of testing.
Time of testing.
Multiples of 40s are times of testing. That's why the 40-year bell or 2,000 years is so essential on our calendar if we want to understand Yahweh's timing. But there's another reason as well. And the second reason is that Yahweh doesn't like to intervene in human history. If God was intervening all the time, you know, people are always asking a miracle for their God to help them score a touchdown, you know, touchdown Jesus. And, they point to the sky, they hit a home run, and, you know, God's intervening in everyday activity according to the religious fanatic. That's just not the way God operates. He wants to be demonstrative in history as infrequently as possible and still achieve his plan.
Right.
You know why that is?
because there's no free will if he didn't.
That is correct. Because if God were constantly intervening in history, he would have to circumvent free will.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, there is no way for God to empower Tim Tebow touchdowns without interfering in free will and artificially helping Tim and artificially hurting those defenders.
Mm-hmm.
So God would have to be this master manipulator that was always pulling the strings, and that free will was really nothing. It was meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just not God's style. Free will has to be sacrosanct. If it's not, then there's no love. There's no real choice. Part of it is that he has a plan, and that he has laid out his plan to play out over the course of 7,000 years, because everything he does is based on 6 plus 1 equals 7. 6 is the number of man created on the sixth day, plus God in addition to God is perfection. Or God in addition to man is perfection. Whichever way you want to look at it, 6 plus 1 equals God's plan. And for that to occur, for everything to play out on the schedule that he had so designated so that we might understand him and his timing and his plan and what awaits us, so that we might be enlightened, that timing was important.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sticks to the schedule and only intervenes in the right time, in the right way, according to the plan that he has established. It just proves that he is dependable.
And a master teacher.
Right. So did Yahweh take the Israelites and ensure they would stay in Egypt as slaves under the influence of that religious and political regime? Or did he engage personally and liberate them?
Well, he came to their rescue.
Yeah. And did he come to the rescue as part of Pesach, Matzah, Bikkurim, and Shavuot?
Amazingly, the timing was good there again.
Okay, and how did Yahweh go about rescuing and freeing the rest of us?
Well, the same way, by what he did accomplished in year 33 of the Common Era.
Right, which is year 4000 Yah. He liberated and perfected and freed the rest of us by enabling his promises by way of Pesach, Matzah, Bikkurim, and Shavuot. How many of the Mikre were fulfilled during the Exodus, and how many of the Mikre have been fulfilled in human history?
Coincidentally, four.
Four of them. Hmm. And the four were fulfilled in the fourth era, the year 4000 Yah. Beyond the fact that Yahweh's approach right from the beginning with Abraham was to invite he and Sarah out of Babylon, Babel, which means confusion. It's why Babylon is associated with Hasatan, Satan, and the Torahless One of the last days, the Whore of Babylon, which is largely Christianity today and will be, as why Christianity be embraced by the very individual the Christians refer to as the Antichrist, who is really the Torahless One. That Yahweh's goal is to encourage us, to invite us out of Babylon so that he can walk with us and we can walk with him to the Promised Land. But there is an issue that comes up in Acts, and we're going to rejoin Acts 15 here in just a second, which covers the Jerusalem summit, where Paul was censored. But there is another aspect of Acts which also proves that Paul was lying. And that is, Kirk, was the who was present? Do you think there was a significant likelihood that Shimon Kefesh, Yohanan, and Jacob, James, John, and Peter were present in Jerusalem when the set-apart spirit fulfilled Shavuot, the promise of the Sabbath?
Of course they were.
Yeah. And we're only told that one thing transpired as a result of that. What was the one thing that was the benefit of being enriched and empowered during Shavuot?
Well, they were able to speak and everyone would understand what they said.
Yeah, were they the languages that they were able to speak in delineated?
And it was about, I don't know, maybe 15 or so, but there's certainly everything from Persian to Egyptian to Greek, on and on and on and on. So.
Yeah, it named all the different languages that they were given the empowered to speak. Was Hebrew one of those languages?
Well, they already spoke Hebrew, and they spoke in Hebrew, so yeah. They would have been understood there.
Yeah, but the Hebrew was not listed among them. For the obvious reason.
No, it wasn't.
Hebrew was not. So if they had, if their intent was to teach them how to empower them to speak Hebrew so that they could communicate to Jews, the set-apart spirit did not enable that, did
she? No, it wouldn't be necessary, you know.
Now, why would the set-apart spirit empower them specifically to speak these 15 languages of the nations and peoples around Israel, all of whom were Goyim ethnicities, if in fact that wasn't the purpose of Shavua?
That would be the only reason for that to happen.
Right. So when Paul says that these same guys who just a matter of 17 years earlier had been empowered to speak all, enriched to speak all of these languages, to share the message that they had witnessed through the words and deeds of Yosha with the ethnicities in their own language. And now Paul is saying, no, God has specifically said he alone has the rights to this. And he alone witnessed the empowerment and decree when in Jerusalem thousands of people witnessed it and experienced it and can affirm that it occurred.
Right. Sorry. I mean,
it's ludicrous,
it's laughable.
Isn't it?
It's totally laughable.
Just laughable. And you think there's a Christian theologian, a scholar, that doesn't know those two facts and how irreconcilable they are?
Well, if you were a Christian theologian, I would ask you, is there any way that Yah would stick to the script for 4,000 years, and then all of a sudden, for no reason, he abandons it on around 50 CE.
Yeah, and why would Yosha have his primary sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, saying, do not think that I have come to annul or do away with the Torah in any way. I've not only come to fulfill it. Not a single letter or any portion of a letter in of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms will be negated so long as the heavens and earth exist. And that anybody who were to suggest that any aspect of the Torah has been done away with, they're going to be called lowly and little.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who proclaims the merit of all of the details of the Torah, they are going to be valued in the spiritual realm of heaven. How do you reconcile that?
You can't. And then you have to ask yourself, you know, if all of a sudden he has to realize, Yahweh would have to realize somehow that his plan was totally unsatisfactory in order to make a change.
So the God who created the universe, who conceived life,
right,
who communicated the Torah, the prophets, and Psalms, who has been perfect on his understanding of history all the way back to the first day of creation, all the way to the last day of human existence, that same God blew it when he came to his plan of teaching, of relationship, and of salvation?
That's
the God who created life can't save life?
That's what you're asking us to believe.
The God who created life through a communication medium, DNA, can't communicate effectively with us? Yeah, right. Awesomely clear. And there is no way to reason your way around it, that the claims that Paul was making are utterly false. And this is the most direct way of recognizing that, or one of them anyway. As you begin to read in the 15th chapter of Acts, which chronicles the very meeting that Paul was criticizing, where he was demeaning the participants, particularly John, Peter, and James. It begins by telling us, defining the conflict, defining the sides, defining the issue. And it says, and some, having come down from Yahudah, this means related to Yah, were teaching the brethren that if you are not circumcised as prescribed by Moshe, you are not able to be saved. That's what they were teaching. Based upon the Torah, were they teaching a message that was consistent with Yahweh's Torah teaching?
Verbatim.
Yahweh does use the term salvation a number of times. and he speaks of salvation. I think he prefers the term tzedak, which is to be made right, to be made upright.
Upright.
To be made right is to be in a position where you know the truth. You're committed to those things that are correct. Your perspective is accurate. You're in a rightful position with God. I mean, I'd much rather be right, because being right with God, equates to salvation. But, when Yahweh is throughout his Torah, is he focused primarily on saving us, or is he focused primarily in introducing himself to us and guiding us so that we might come to enjoy having a relationship with him?
Yes, it's the walk down the pathway, the straight and narrow path, as it turns out, but that's mm-hmm. what he's looking for.
Yeah.
So anybody can pull you out of the boat, but that don't mean they want to spend the rest of the time in their life in the boat with you.
Yeah.
There's got to be more to it than that.
Right. So the salvation process, just as it was for the Jews and Mitzrayim and Egypt, is part of them engaging in the covenant and following Yahweh's advice, which ultimately leads to them participating in the seven Moed Mikre, where they are made immortal, where they are perfected, where they are adopted and enriched and empowered, and ultimately led to the point where the relationship is reconciled and they're engaging in a camping out with God.
Sure.
That is the process. And so Christians are, and I think this is really an influence of Christianity here, where they said they might not be, they won't be saved unless they're circumcised as prescribed by Moshe, which means as prescribed in the Torah. Because does Moshe tell us we have to be circumcised?
No, he repeats the story of Abraham and us.
Yeah, no, it's Yahweh saying that you have to be circumcised.
Yahweh says that.
Right,
yeah, that's
right.
What you mean.
So all Moshe is doing is writing it down.
Yeah, he's a scribe.
Right, right. So it's not, so the Christian influence number one is as prescribed by Moshe. Moses.
The connotation, you know.
Yeah, and that is, that, right, and that is invalid.
Mm-hmm.
That is inappropriate. It's as prescribed by Yahweh in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing, and that distinction is important for Christians to try to have people buy into, because if it's said as prescribed by Yahweh in His Torah, then Christians would have a real hard time saying, "Oh well, it is." He is God, and it is Torah. This is His prescription. How do we come up with a religion that annuls that? So they change it from Yahweh prescribed in His Torah to Moshe. That's a legacy of Christianity. It's a tragedy, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The second aspect here is that it's focused on salvation. Yahweh's not focused on salvation.
No.
He's focused on the covenant relationship.
Yeah.
He's focused on guiding us to a place where we can live with Him.
Right.
Salvation is just as a byproduct of
the relationship, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the seven steps we walk to Yahweh, the first four of which being the most important, so that we can live with Him, salvation isn't really demonstrably part of any of them. It's by implication, each of them culminate with us being saved, but the first issue is immortality. Now, immortality by itself is not salvation. You can be immortal and not saved.
That's right.
So, immortality just means that we transition from being a mortal being of flesh and bone to an immortal being that is spirit.
Right.
Okay, so that's all it does. Pesach is simply about immortality. That's a good thing. I mean, you can't be saved unless first you're immortal, right? You can't be saved spared from death unless you're first made immortal.
Uh-huh.
Now you can be immortal and be estranged from God. To be in God's presence, what must we become, at least from His perspective?
Well, he said you have to be perfect. That's why you don't bring
there you
all
go.
Demon
he
things
said,
around you.
Right. Second condition of the covenant. Walk to me and become perfect. So you, since Yahweh is perfect, there is no reason for him to, and no way really for him, to accept imperfection.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. In his presence. And so that's the reason why when Yahweh is dealing with imperfect people as, exhibited himself to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bekodim as he led the children of Israel out of Egypt, as he conversed with Abraham and Sarah. That's why it's always a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. The entirety of Yahweh and his perfection being exposed to us would incinerate us. And so it's really that we can't exist in his presence without being perfected. So Yahweh perfects us. And the means that he has done that and to still be just and fair is that he himself paid the penalty to ransom us from our failures.
Right.
So the second step along the way is matzah, which resolves the issue of being immortal but still being flawed. Matzah removes the religious and political the main flaws from a human soul,
mm-hmm.
religion and politics.
Right.
And even Yosha specifically said that when he was talking about what the yeast represents. I think it's obvious when you read the Torah, but it's he, in case you didn't figure it out, he says, I don't know why you're talking about bread here. It has nothing to do with bread. It has everything to do with yeast, and yeast represents the scribes and the Pharisees. It represents
right.
politics and religion. That's
right.
what I'm removing from you. So the second step along the way just simply makes us perfect. So now if you're immortal and perfect, guess where you can be?
You can be adopted.
Yeah, you can
come
be in Yahweh. You can be in Yahweh's
right
presence. Right. You can be in Yahweh's presence. Now, being in Yahweh's presence, Hasatan can occasionally show up in his presence because Hasatan is a spiritual being, but that doesn't mean he gets to live with God, does he?
No.
Doesn't mean that he gets any inheritance from God, does it?
Not at all.
Doesn't mean that he has any status with God as it relates to being a child of God.
But he will let him be immortal.
Right. So the next step along the way, once we are immortal and once we are perfected so that we can be in Yahweh's presence, Yahweh's, then the third step is to be adopted so that we gain status, so that we are elevated in terms of who we are from God's perspective. So we're treated as children.
All right. Royal family.
We're a family. And then the fourth step along the way enriches and empowers us. That's why Shimon Kefesh spoke about Shavuah and being enriched and empowered to be able to communicate to this message and to understand what Yahweh had to say.
Right.
So once you're part of Yahweh's family and then you're enriched and empowered by that whole process, then at that point, you are saved.
Right.
In fact,
that's dramatic, yeah.
Right, and I would go as far as to say that once you reach that point that you've received the five benefits of the covenant through the fulfillment of the first four invitations to meet with God, that salvation, in terms of importance, is I would say meaningless.
But it doesn't come up. I mean, I'm safe in your house. What I care at that
point. Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm living with the Creator of the universe, and I've inherited all that He has to offer. I've been enriched and empowered by Him. I've been perfected by Him. I've been adopted into His family, and I've been made immortal by Him. And I get to spend all of the rest of my existence forever with Him, doing fun stuff.
And growing.
Where does salvation enter in terms of being a priority among those things?
It's not a hot topic then.
No. See, Christians are fixated on wanting to be saved, but they don't know what they want to be saved to. I guess they want to be saved from hell, but they're not going to hell. And Yahweh says, why would I want to spend eternity with you if you don't even know who I am, if you don't even like who I am, if you have no respect for my Torah and my teaching? Why would I want to spend eternity with you?
I think you can boil it down to you don't care.
No.
Now, that attitude is the hardest one to deal with. If you don't care.
I know. Enough to listen.
To even listen. Right. Even Shama.
Yeah, if you don't care enough to even listen to what God had to say, then... Why would God God wants to save you? Yeah, why would God want to save you? Why would he want to spend eternity with you? He wouldn't. He just doesn't. And so this fixation on salvation, again, is a Christian topic, but it doesn't change the fact that what the Yehudim, those who are related to Yah, were teaching. What they were teaching is accurate. If you're a man and you're not circumcised, or if you're a woman and you don't understand the importance of circumcising your sons as the sign of the covenant, then you are not saved.
Mm-hmm.
What did Yahweh say about participating in Pesach, which is what makes you immortal, if you're not circumcised?
Well, you can't. Don't do it, because you could become, theoretically, you become immortal, and but you cannot be, but you'll still be separated.
Right. So you're immortal, but estranged, right, from not set apart unto, yeah, well, that is the hell. That's the thing you want to avoid. And then what did he say about heaven, about uncircumcised people being in heaven?
He said there aren't any.
There aren't any. And this lie that, of course, that Paul is the one who began, that uncircumcised men were welcomed into heaven, and that there was a message of uncircumcision that would lead to heaven, he called the most abominable lie that man has ever promoted. The Yehuda, then they were actually, they came down from Yehuda, which means they came down from the province of Yahud, which is related to Yah, and relate to Yah. That's the area around Jerusalem is Yehuda. To come from Yehuda and to be associated with Yehuda, and to be communicating that the Torah was still intact, would you be consistent with or opposed to the message of Yosha at that point?
No, you'd be totally consistent with.
All right. Yosha was circumcised, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And Yosha affirmed everything the Torah had to say, didn't he?
I quoted it verbatim.
And he said that, do not think that he came to annul any aspect of the Torah. Would he have to have annulled the Torah to do away with circumcision as a requirement to participate in the covenant?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does God describe any other way to have a relationship with him other than the covenant?
No.
And does he give you any chance of getting away from or doing away with circumcision and participating in the covenant?
No, I don't have the quotes immediately in front of me, but they're all very much this you will do forever through all your children, for all your generations.
Right. As spirit of the circumcision of the spirit and of the flesh.
And of the flesh.
Right.
Symbolic, but the other is obviously vital too.
Right. Vital, that you have you've accepted the sign of the covenant. And so to for them to say that, yeah, you know, that's what the Torah says. The Torah, I'm going to teach what the Torah says, and if you're teaching what the Torah says, is there any possibility that your teaching could be inconsistent with God? Yeah, can you be wrong if you're
totally
teaching from the Torah?
Totally impossible.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we can relax doing this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't claim to have all the answers. You don't have all the answers.
Absolutely not.
I don't claim to be the smartest guy in the world. You don't claim to be the smartest guy in the world. What we do that gives us great comfort in doing the show is we're saying this is what God said. You know, if you aren't okay with that,
so okay.
Fine with us. We don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't drag you. I can't drag
right.
You screaming down, you know, to heaven.
But is there any chance you can be wrong if you say that you have to be circumcised to be saved, according to the Torah's teaching?
Not, absolutely not. I'm totally confident.
Right. Now, circumcision alone won't save you, will it?
No, a lot of people are circumcised.
Right. Yahweh never said that circumcision alone would save you. He just said it was a sign of the covenant. And that if you want to participate in the covenant, you will be circumcised, whether you're a Gentile or a Jew. Correct?
Yeah, if you don't even have the same perspective of him on why you're being circumcised, then it loses all its meaning. You have to teach why
right.
You're doing this to begin with.
Yeah, in fact, I would go as far as to say, and I think this is a good point, Kirk,
mm-hmm.
that as it relates to each of the five conditions to participate in the covenant,
mm-hmm.
if you don't not only understand what they represent. First, you got to know that they exist, and then you need to understand what they mean. But if you don't agree that this is the right thing to do, simply doing it is superfluous. And so circumcision, just doing it, is superfluous unless you understand the symbolism behind it and the reasons for it.
Right. That's why you are always very good about correcting people in the sense that we're not doing the Torah, obeying the Torah,
right,
up to the law, because there isn't any.
Right.
We are being taught so that we will,
right,
understand.
Correct. We're learning from the teaching.
Right.
The purpose of the Torah was to teach. We're learning from the teaching. We're being guided by the direction. And, and you know, every one of these things, we've talked so much about them, that the first condition of the covenant, which is to walk away from your country, to walk away from religion and politics, to walk away from Babel and the influence of Babel, you realize how important that is.
Yeah, consider this, that every major story is about is the beginning of the walk, coming to talking with Yahweh,
mm-hmm,
walking with Yahweh, getting to know Him. It's,
mm-hmm,
what we would call an engagement when you get married. You engage with someone in order, mm-hmm, to decide whether you want to,
right,
bind yourself with them. And even if you go so far as to say, well, Doe didn't have that same experience because Yahweh didn't show up to walk with him. He walked through the Torah.
Right.
And that's the thing that I can do.
You know, as Yahweh was talking to Adam and Chawa about their relationship, didn't the first thing that he say to them that they would need to walk away from their mother and father? Even to them? Adam and Chawa, way back in the garden, that they would leave their mother and father.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said when you have your children.
Yeah, yeah, and when they would become one. And he began all the way back then, and then in the covenant, after he says, walk away from your company, your country, leave your father's home.
Mm-hmm.
You need to leave that behind, the family of man, leave that behind if you want to come into the family of God.
Mm-hmm.
The story is consistent all the way from the very beginning.
And he will change it.
No, we'll return tomorrow.